Hello and welcome. This is Michelle Marchant Johnson from Love Life Coaching and the host of the Man Panel. And I'm so excited that you are here to join us tonight for our special event called Let's Talk About Men. I'm so excited to have you all here for this special event, and I so appreciate having spent the last several days with you on the Man Panel. I've had so much great feedback from all of you, and I'm so excited that we have this opportunity tonight to kind of recap some of the highlights of the Man Panel. And also, I have a wonderful special guest who is going to be my co-host for this event tonight. She is Wendy Newman. She's a very good friend of mine and a colleague, and she's just amazing, so you're in for a treat. And I'll tell you a little bit more about Wendy in just a few minutes. We're likely to go about 90 minutes tonight, so if you have the chance and can stay on with us, we'd love to have you here because we're going to share with you some of our deepest understandings about men, some of the things that we've learned about them and from them. And then we're also going to take some of your questions. I'm also going to share some of the insights some of you have shared with me about some of the things that you have taken away from the Man Panel that so many of you have sent me emails about, because I think it's great for us to all have a chance to kind of recap some of the key things that we're walking away from this event with. And first of all, I just want to compliment each one of you for being here, and also I want to compliment you for your commitment to yourself and to being willing to explore this area of understanding and appreciating men on a deeper level, because this allows us to avoid some of the common relationship mishaps and to have better interactions and communications with men. This has been so much fun because women from all over the world have been on this event, and I consider you the absolute cream of the crop if you've been part of this event. Because let me tell you something, ladies, so many people in the world go through life without ever taking the time to gain this level of awareness or consciousness. And one of the reasons I think this is so important is there's so many studies that show that your primary relationship can be one of the highest predictors of your overall satisfaction and happiness in your life. And as you probably already know, if you've had relationships that haven't been very happy or satisfying, it can also be a source of deep heartache, pain, and sorrow. And so that's why I think it's so important for us all to be seeking a greater understanding of ourselves and the dynamics of relationships. Now, one thing that I want to make clear, and I know when you hear from Wendy, she'll definitely agree with me on this, is this Man Panel is something that we created specifically for women to give women a deeper understanding about men. Now, I believe that men need to also have a deeper understanding about women. And one thing I want to make clear is anything we talk about here tonight is not about you twisting or conforming to be someone that you're not or being less than who you are in the world. In fact, I believe that you should be out there in the world being the very brightest, boldest version of yourself. But this is about you knowing how to more effectively navigate the world of dating and relationships so that you can actually have more of what you really want in your life and in your love lives. And I believe that you are a woman of exceptionally high value, and you deserve to have the relationship you most desire with someone that you can admire, respect, and trust. My hope for each of you is that you can feel loved, cherished, and adored. I also want to make it clear, though, that I believe you're complete, whole, beautiful, and amazing, exactly as you are, no matter what your relationship status. However, that having been said, if you're here tonight, you're probably wanting more in this area of your life, and that's our intention, is to support you. And along with thanking each of you for joining me on this Man Panel journey, I also, even though they may not all be with us here tonight, I really want to thank all of the men that have been a part of the Man Panel. It has really moved and touched my heart to interview each of them, and I feel like each of them has contributed something really important to this overall experience, and that there have been so many juicy pieces of wisdom and so much richness in the interviews, and it's really been amazing for me to have even a deeper understanding of men in talking to so many of them in such a brief period of time. I do believe that there are a lot of men out there who would benefit greatly, as I said earlier, by learning more about women and what goes on in our hearts and minds. But tonight, our event is for us to talk about men and to go even deeper and recap on some of the key ideas about what's really going on in their minds and hearts. And we're talking tonight as we give this guidance, advice, wisdom, insight, whatever you might want to call it. We'll be talking a lot about, in general terms, about men who we believe are the kind of men that you would like to deal with and who are dealing with you in good faith, meaning that they are basically decent men who have good character and who are psychologically stable. Unfortunately, there are those outliers of men that don't fit into that category, and that's a whole nother discussion that we're not really going to get into tonight. And because of the time constraints, we're only going to be able to touch on a few of the things we'd like to go into in talking about men, but our intention is to give you a lot of value and some additional takeaways that you can use right now. Again, I want to compliment you for being here, and I really do believe that one of the keys to having a great relationship with anyone is gaining deeper understanding of ourselves and about others. And for the purpose of tonight's discussion, the others we're talking about just happen to be men, since that's the theme of this series. But the overall intention here is to create an opportunity to do what Stephen R. Covey recommended in his book, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, which is seek first to understand and then to be understood. So we're just going deeper on our understanding of men. And I think that principle is so powerful, and I imagine sometimes what the whole world would be like if we all approached our interactions with each other in that way, not just our personal relationships or our family relationships, but in the world at large, because we're living in a time where there's so much conflict and misunderstanding and anger and pain. And I just think this whole concept of seeking first to understand and then to be understood is really powerful. What we're going to begin with tonight, this is going to be really fun. Both Wendy and I are going to be sharing some general observations about men, even though we know they're all individuals, and some of our experiences and perceptions and things that we've learned from interacting with them. And some of the things may or may not strike you as really significant or important, or may not resonate with you as much or feel like they're as relevant to you personally. But we do invite you to explore some of these ideas and to see what ideas stand out for you and what key ideas and concepts you can take away to help you to avoid future heartbreak, disappointment, and create new possibilities in your interactions with men. Keep an open mind, consider some of the ideas, and see what you can take away that will support you on your journey. And we're going to just have a lot of fun tonight. First of all, I feel like most of you already probably feel like you know me. You've been hearing my voice, and I'm the host of the Man Panel. Just a real quick recap, I had a long and winding journey to love, and I used to say I was dating for decades and say I was going to write a book called Dating for Decades. And then I finally sought some support, and that allowed me to have some breakthroughs and to discover some self-defeating beliefs and behaviors that I was able to move through, and that allowed me to meet and attract my own Mr. Right and to become an ecstatic first-time bride at age 43. My husband and I will have been married 10 years in October, and it's been an amazing gift and blessing. And then after a 20-plus year career in corporate America, I became a relationship coach, and I work with a select number of single women, becoming your virtual wing woman, so to speak, and help you to invite, inspire, and ignite love and passion with your Mr. Right with grace, ease, and elegance. So that's just a little more about me. Now, you all probably feel like you know me. You probably hear my voice in your sleep now after listening to me over the last few days. But before we get started, I also want to introduce our wonderful guest and co-host, which is my friend and colleague, Wendy Newman. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, Michelle. Thank you for having me.
So so happy to have you. And I'm just going to tell you a little bit about Wendy, and then I'm going to have her tell you a little bit more of the personal side of her story. I'll tell you a little bit about the professional side. Wendy Newman is the author of 121 First Dates, How to Succeed at Online Dating, Fall in Love, and Live Happily Ever After, Really. And she is getting love from Access Hollywood, The Wall Street Journal, Huffington Post, Chicago Tribune, Washington Post, Glamour Self, and more. Wendy just completed not too long ago a big tour, a book tour, and was on all different kinds of TV and radio stations and media outlets. Wendy has helped thousands of people by leading hundreds of workshops internationally on the topics of understanding men, sex, dating, online dating, and partnership. As a dating, relationship, and sex educator, she leads personal talks, group events, and is a professional certified relationship coach providing personal coaching for smart, savvy women throughout the world. And I love this part. Wendy says, I'm also a compassionate fellow dater who navigated my way through 120 first dates before I retired my favorite lucky dating skirt for first date number 121. Welcome again, Wendy. I'm so happy to have you here, and we're going to talk about men tonight, and I'm going to have you start out by telling us just a little bit more about your personal story, and then we'll have you share some of the key things you have learned from and about men.
Sure. Thank you, Michelle. So how I got to be here today is in 2002, all the way back to 2002, I left a really great long-term marriage that had one little deal breaker in it that we just could never wrap our heads around. And so at the end of a long-term marriage, the first thing I did as a single person is I went out and I found a workshop to do, and I sat myself in that hotel room in the seat for 2 days to learn about men so I didn't screw up the next one. I didn't know anything about the seminar company. I didn't know much about it. All I knew was I was going to learn about men for 2 days. And unlike you, I didn't have the wherewithal and the knowledge to find out the information about men from men, like you've been doing on this man panel this whole time. Mm-hmm. I had to hear all about men from a woman because, you know, you can trust another woman.
Right.
And that's where I was all the way back in 2002, where I thought, you can trust a woman. Don't know what you can trust a man for. Boy, has my life changed since then. So I did this two-day workshop, and it happened to be by relationship expert Alison Armstrong. And I fell so in love with her body of work that I started working for the company right away. So here I was, newly single, and before I knew it, within a matter of weeks and months and then years, I was a man expert, a relationship expert, a partner expert, and I was single, which was interesting. So I, one of the first things that I did as a new staff person for Allison is I started researching men. It's part of your job there. You want to teach women about men, you got to put your money where your mouth is and make sure what you're saying isn't just what she said, but your own actual experience. So over the years, I've led, like Michelle said, I've led hundreds of workshops, and in these workshops, each workshop has a man panel, a little mini four-person man panel on a Sunday afternoon. So I've heard hundreds and hundreds of men talk about topics on the man panel, but also in my personal life and in my professional life, I've researched men. I get them together in groups. I take polls through Facebook. I have one-on-one conversations in depth with people I know and people I don't know. And so I've really gotten the skinny on every single dingle topic I could think of that men could answer about being a man and about women and dating and sex and relationship and commitment and marriage, infidelity, and the whole ball of wax. So pretty much any woman could walk up to me on the street and say, hey, what do you think a man thinks about blank? And I'd probably have an answer for her. I think my answer would start with, are you asking about your man? Because if you are, you should just go ask him. But here's what I know. So, yes, I did all that research. And then I did my own research on, not intentionally, but on my 121 first dates, and that was never, ever something that I had set out to do like a goal. I didn't think dating was a fun thing to do. I didn't want to be a serial dater. I thought being newly free and single with all this new man information, I'd be single 2 seconds and I'd only need to go on one or two dates, but nope. It took a decade because of a couple of different reasons, but one of the biggest reasons is I was really clear about what I was looking for, and I knew that a couple of things that I needed to be happy for the long haul, those two things were really hard to find in one person. So I knew that I was asking for almost the impossible, and at 121 he showed up. Mm. So that's my story.
You deserve an award. You deserve an award.
Thank you. And Lucky 121's name is Dave, and we live together in San Francisco, and we've been together for 4 years with our dog.
Okay.
Do you want me to dive into the five things?
Yeah, so thank you so much, Wendy, for sharing. I just wanted the ladies to hear a little bit more about your story. And one of the things that stood out there for me, which I think is really important, especially if you want a long-term committed kind of relationship, is one thing that you mentioned there, Wendy, which was the clarity you had about some things that were really important to you. And this is a whole other topic, but I think there's this line between having that clarity and also feeling like, are we being too picky and all of that kind of stuff. But I believe that actually having greater clarity about the needs to have things, the absolutes, not the all the nice to haves, is a really good guideline for us in meeting and attracting the right person. Would you agree before
Absolutely. You move
on?
Absolutely. They probably want to know what my two things are, do you think?
They do. We all do.
One of the things that I need in a relationship is a lot of freedom and autonomy because I go a lot. I just got back from a 20-city book tour over a six-month period where sometimes he was with me and sometimes he was not with me. So I need a lot of freedom. I need a lot of autonomy. That's one thing. But another thing that I wanted for the very first time in my life, another thing that I really, really wanted was I wanted a masculine, take-charge, alpha, I-got-you man. And when you get that man, what flavor you usually get with that is controlling. So,
yeah, that's true. That can happen a lot, can't it?
Right? So to get the freedom and autonomy married with super-duper masculine was a really tricky flavor, but I nailed it.
I love that. I love that. Well, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, I bring that up because we all have lists. You know, and you really want to look at your list and see, hey, does this deal breaker thing that I really have to have, does it cancel out the other deal breaker thing that I have to have? So you're oftentimes, you might find that you're looking for two men and thinking that you can get it in one because movies will tell you you can.
Yeah, movies.
Yeah.
What we all should base our expectations on, right?
Yes, he can be a billionaire CEO, but pay all of his attention to you.
That's right. That's right. Okay, so let's move into, I know that you have five specific things that you're going to share with us that you have learned from and discovered about men in all of your mini man panels and all of your interactions and all of these classes you've taught and everything. And I just think this is a really great opportunity for us to hear your perspective on some of those things.
Thank you. And I picked five things that I hope that at least a few of them will touch you. And they're things that really matter to me. I didn't try and fit them into a dating or a marriage or anything like that type of category. I just, some will serve you and some will be hopefully touching your heart. So one of the first things from more of a practical standpoint is how men commit differently than women. You know, one of the things that we often hear in our culture is that men are non-committal and that they take forever to commit and we're ready and they're not and we can't move in with them because then there's the whole cow milk scenario and, you know, all the things that we know culturally and in our society to be the truth about men. But what I've learned over all of these years is that men commit, and they commit really deeply, and they commit differently than women. So if you were to ask most men, just a man on the street, hey, if you're single, would you ever want to be married? His answer will be most likely something like, if he's an, you know, older than 19, his answer will most likely be, sure, if I meet the right woman, or sure, if I meet the right person. Mm-hmm. Or I hope I find the right person. So they're looking at partnering from if I meet the right person. You ask a woman who's never been married, do you want to get married? Mostly the answer is yes. There are some no's, but mostly we're yes, 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 yes. And if we're a particular age, yes, yesterday. So we want marriage as a knee-jerk response, as a biological knee-jerk response of that safety and that connection and partnership, where a man is only going to do it if it's an enhancement to his life. It's not as life-threatening to a man. It's more out of a human spirit place than a biological human-animal space. And how they commit is very, very different than a woman, because if a woman is going to go on a date and she hopes that he's the one, she might even say to a girlfriend, oh, he sounds so great and his profile is amazing, I hope he's the one, before she ever meets him. Where a man is going to be much more likely to say that she could become the one after he's already met her and spent time with her. Mm-hmm. Men usually don't say, I hope she's the one, before they ever meet. That's more of a woman thing. So they're very focused on what they need and what that whole person is versus the title or the form of a relationship. We love the form. We love having a boyfriend and moving him into fiance and then moving him up to husband, right? We like the form of it. We want to lock that thing in. We want to be married. And women, one of the very unlovely parts of us is, and again, we don't all do this and we don't mean to do this, but we staticize each other around, ooh, hey, what does that ring mean on your finger? Are you getting the upgrade? Are you getting married? Mm-hmm. where men just don't have that relationship. So their relationship to commitment is to the whole person, and only if it makes sense, and only if it's going to elevate his life, and only if he's going to be able to get what he needs from her. And he'll take a lot longer to commit because he's going to see her on a first date and think, oh, cute and charming, and that's the beginning of filling in the puzzle pieces to the puzzle. Are we a match? Is this a future? And he'll do a lot. He'll fill out that whole puzzle before he'll commit. He'll work out every detail and see, you know, there's about 12 different things that a man will look at to see if she's the right person to marry. And he'll sort through all those things over how long it'll take him before he'll commit, or even commit to boyfriend. Where a woman, and not all women, but many of us, will commit to a man even if there are things that we need to change about him. We like him. We love him. He's hot and he's funny and we like him for our life. And there are these three changes we're going to get right to work on. Do you know what I mean, Michelle?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, yes. The three things we're going to get right to work on. The fixer-upper projects begin.
Yeah, the training that we need to do, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the refining.
Yeah.
He'd be just right if.
Yeah, and they commit to the whole package. You know, if you're at a family barbecue and Uncle Larry's ribbing him in the ribs with his elbow going, ah, can you believe her? Look at her over there. She's laughing so loud. And he'll say, well, yes, of course, that's just Sally. Like, he commits to the whole package. He doesn't try and change any part of it the way we do. Now, I know I'm generalizing like crazy, so all men are different, all women are different. But as a whole, it's one of the reasons why it takes men longer to commit. Also, another reason it takes them longer is because they understand there's a huge difference between I'm dating you and I'm now your boyfriend. And then again, when I'm your boyfriend versus I'm your husband. Because they are acutely aware that when they get upgraded to the new status, there's a whole lot of accountabilities that come with that. Like, you own them. You own their time. You make a honey-do list. You tell them how to dress, some of you. You tell them who he can hang out with and who he can never hang out with again, ever. You're going to make him go to Utah at Christmas. Sorry, Michelle. You're going to make him go to Utah at Christmas, even though he hates the snow and some of your crazy family members. You own him. Right? So part of the checking you out is this the person that I'm going to let own me? And is she going to give me freedom and space in some of these areas? Or is she going to be the person who's just running the show and in charge? So that's that's my first one. What do you have to say about that, Michelle?
I'm going to add a little bit when I share mine. I'm going to piggyback, but I'm going to hold off on my comments just for a moment on that one. Go right ahead with the next one.
Okay. Oh, I spent 5.5 years studying men and their type. It drove me nuts, this topic, men and their type. And one of the things that I wanted to share men and type with you, one of the reasons I wanted to share this with you was because one of the things that we try to do when we first meet a man is we try and attract him. It's just biological. We use our wit and our intellect and our beauty, and we try and attract him. It's how we get him. We attract him with our sexual attraction and physical attraction and our smarts. And then once we think that we're dating, we try and keep attracting him. Like, we got to up our game. We got to go shopping now because he's already seen all our cute outfits. We got to become more attractive. We need to buy shiny hair products and become more attractive. Maybe some perfume with the pheromones to trick him to be more attractive, right? And the really good news is men are either attracted or they're not on sight. You're either in or you're out. And it can be heartbreaking if you're out and you wanted to be in, but it's kind of good news. Because if a man says to you, I really like you, I think you're amazing, and I'm not attracted to you, you should listen to him. You shouldn't try and flip him. And we as women have the luxury of from time to time being attracted to men who we weren't originally attracted to. They can grow on us. But for most men, we don't grow on them. It's a yes or a no, and they don't have any say about it. And it's heartbreaking to them. I say we have the luxury. It's heartbreaking to them because there are women in men's life that they adore, that they wish they could move beyond a sister-type relationship, but it's just not there. It just doesn't ever grow. So... Mm-hmm. Oh, what a relief. If you are his type, you're in. And as you age and things drop and relocate to different parts of your body, you're still going to be his type. And when you gain a little weight or you lose a little weight, you're still going to be his type. So we can kind of relax around that. And why I was so driven nuts by it is because we have these archetypes, you know, long, blonde, and lean, or petite, curly, brunette, you know, fit girl, or redhead, buxom girl. You know, we have all these archetypes or stereotypes about what is a type, but they're not that narrow. They're not that shallow. And you know, even if you're married and your husband says, well, Cameron Diaz is my type and you don't look anything like Cameron Diaz, don't worry, you're also his type. He would have never married you, and they have all kinds of types. And why it drove me so insane for 5.5 years is because the very first man out of my marriage, first date number one, he and I fell in love, and we were together about a year and a half. And it didn't work because we were both newly out of a divorce, and we lived in a very small town, Sonoma, California. And I knew his ex-wife, and he swore we were the same type, me and his ex-wife, totally the same type. Now, at that time, I had long red hair to the middle of my back, green eyes because I wore contacts. I weighed about 250 pounds. You got that picture?
Mm-hmm.
His ex-wife was about 95 pounds wet, about a foot shorter than me, Italian, pixie haircut, brown eyes, not my personality, not in my tribe, not my flavor at all. You couldn't get further apart between the two of us if you tried.
Mm.
To this day, he swears we're the same type. So you can never guess. You can never think, well, his last girlfriend or his ex-wife was, so I'm not. Or am I his type and his ex-wife wasn't? No. And how you can really relate to it is the two things, the takeaway from type that I want you to have is you're either in or you're out. And if he asks you out on another date, you're in. You're in. So you don't need to worry about it. You can stop running out and buying new outfits and just wear the ones that make you happy. You don't need to buy that shiny hair product. You don't need to work so hard about
it. This can save us all a lot of money.
I know, right? A lot of grief and a lot of money. So one of the takeaways is you're in. And the other takeaway is you can think about it from your type. I mean, I have all kinds of types. James Spader's my type. Snoop Dogg is my type. They're not the same. Hugh Laurie, my type. Again, not the same. So just like you have many different types, he has many different types. And the most important thing is if you're dating or you're married, you're his type. What do you want to say about that?
Yeah, I just want to emphasize and echo something that you said here. I do believe that men typically do know almost immediately within those first few minutes if you are his type. And I think, yes, we could save ourselves a whole lot of heartache and frustration from not trying to flip him, as you said. I mean, during my dating for decades, I invested in one relationship with one man for a long, long time. And he had all of these amazing qualities and was perfect for me in so many ways. And we were very, very close in terms of the things that we shared. And we could talk for hours and hours. And we could laugh and laugh and laugh. And he would even take me on really nice dates. But for whatever reason, I think I'm a pretty attractive woman. But for whatever reason, I just did not flip his switch in that way. And I think, Wendy, he really loved me, and I really loved him, but I invested a lot of my precious time and energy in hoping that I could flip him. And I always talk about the three F words. Those of you that have been on the summit probably have heard me talk about this, but there are three F words that I think can, let's just say, foul up your love life. And those are fears, fantasies, and falsehoods. And being in this idea of fantasy is where I was at. I was fantasizing that if I could just get this or that or whatever to work, then it would flip his switch and that this relationship would work. But it was a fantasy because it just was not going to happen. And it wouldn't have happened to this day if I'd have been single. It still would have never happened. And so I think that I just want to say that I completely agree with you. And also to emphasize this point, I do think as women, we do have the luxury of that attraction sometimes growing with men that we don't expect. And that's happened with many of my clients. Now, okay, let's face it, if you go out with them for the first time and your skin crawls, that's probably not going to happen. But if you go out with him and you think, well, okay, you know, I don't know, he's not really my type, you might think that, or, you know, he's a little skinnier than I like. That's what one of my clients said. You know, he's skinnier than I want. But now my client, after getting to know this man, and his heart and his character and how he stepped up and showed up for her and makes her feel so cherished and loved and adored. She's head over heels in love with him and thinks he's the sexiest man alive now. But that was not her initial reaction to him. And because of the other things she was telling me about him, I was saying, give it a little more time. See him a few more times. See how you feel. And yes. She's told me over and over again, I'm so glad that I did that, because she's in her 60s. She's now engaged. They're building a house together. She's like a 20-year-old in love. It's really fun.
Yeah, I hear that story too. And it's the ones you want to give a chance to, again, like Michelle said, not the one that makes your skin crawl, not him, not the one that you're so bored that you know you could eat that for lunch tomorrow and be spit it out and be done. Not that guy, but the one you really like, that it's just not quite who you'd normally have thought you'd pick for yourself, but you like him. That's the one you give a chance to. And I want to say one more thing about type. You can flip him. You really can. And the way you flip him is you put out and exude a ton of sexual energy. If you just wah, wah, just put it out there, wah, wah, a ton of sexual energy, you can flip him and you could trigger that sexual creature in him and you could get him to go home with you. And you could probably do it again and again. But the work that it takes to put out that level of sexual energy when you're not his type is exhausting. And if you've ever done it, I've done it, and if you've ever done it, you know the difference when you look back in your history. The men who, for you, you felt beautiful and liked and smart and funny and attracted to, that's a very different feeling than I had to have him, so I made it happen. It's not lovely. That feeling is not lovely, and it's exhausting.
Yeah, it's not lovely. And after I shared with you this long-term on-again, off-again, I don't even know if we call it a romance or a relationship that I invested so much in with this man, I came to a realization finally that I really wanted and deserved to be with someone that I knew really wanted and felt like it was his most wonderful, best choice to be with me. I wanted that. I wanted someone that I knew had chosen me and I had chosen him, and we were both ecstatic to be together. I didn't want to be someone who worked my way into getting him to kind of like me and possibly commit to me and out of obligation. You know, who wants that? No one wants that. So you're right, that energy that you would have to expend to continue that kind of a relationship is, it's just too much.
Yeah. That happened to me with first date number 5, and he's a good friend of mine, and he wanted to see if he could try it out. He's like, let's try it out. Let's see if you can grow. You're not my type, but let's see if you can grow on me. And I said, oh no, we're not doing that. Oh no.
Good choice.
But for the same reason that you just said, I mean, there was just no way that I was gonna be with somebody who didn't look at me like he adored all of what I look like and who I am.
Yeah. Someone that sees all of you with all of what you might consider your flaws and frailties and all of your lovely, beautiful qualities. He can see all of you and think you're still just the most amazing woman on the planet. That's what we all want, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, so what's your next one, Wendy? This is so much fun.
It's a shorter one. It's probably good. It'll make up a little time. This is something I learned. You know, I have all this training around men and what men say, and I really have a very different view about men and who they are in the world than most women do. But this last piece kind of, I want to say cherry on the top, but it's kind of a heartbreaking cherry on the top. I'm terrible at metaphors. Cherries aren't heartbreaking. But anyway, I learned this from Dave, and it really kind of broke my heart, and I just had so much more compassion for men. But men, at a very young age, right around puberty, as you all know, they, before puberty, they made decisions. And then after puberty starts, they realized they were not the sole decision maker in their life anymore. They had someone below who was consulting with them and often trying to override what they thought, did, acted, and said. And so as a young boy, men had to learn very quickly how to not be the creepy one, right? Got all these hormones rushing through him. He doesn't know what's happening to him. He has no access to having sex with a real-life woman for probably a good decade. And so you want to have some compassion for that, right? And he starts to learn very quickly, I don't want to be the creepy guy. Don't be the creepy guy. Don't say that. Don't look there. Don't look at her. Look down. Look, you know, and we're very sensitive to being looked at in a particular way, like we're mm-hmm. the tastiest snack he's ever seen. Creepy, especially if he's not attractive. So mm-hmm. at a very young age, young boys learn to not be the creepy guy. And as they age and they start dating in their teens and 20s, they're acutely aware of not being the creepy guy. And then they start dating, you know, and having relationships in their 20s, and they're confronted by balancing trying to be a man and not being the creepy guy. You know, they want to be respectful to us. They don't want to come on to us. They don't want to insult us. They don't want to do that yucky street thing, right? A good man doesn't want to do that yo baby or how you doing thing. They don't want to creep you out. And while they're standing in line at Starbucks, they have to overhear two women say something like, "I just don't know why that guy didn't talk to me. He really needs to grow a pair." So they have to balance this life of not being the creepy guy, not being the predator that we all think they all are, right? Being respectful, mm-hmm. finding out ways to show that they're a protector, not the predator. But then we've got to also expect them to be the aggressor, but not creepy. Be the pursuer, mm-hmm. but not too aggressive. If someone's hitting on you, even if he's doing it in the most respectful way, if you're not attracted, many women will call him the creepy guy. That guy was trying to hit on me. Ugh.
Right.
It's heartbreaking. And then they get married, right? Or partnered. And then now they have to watch to be the respectful spouse who would never talk longer than 2 minutes to a woman at a party. And if the wife came up after and said, "Who were you talking to?" he might have to downplay that because he doesn't want to mm-hmm. be the creepy guy. And then they get old, and now they're the old creepy guy.
mm-hmm.
So their whole life is spent monitoring, making sure that we feel safe and not creeped out by who they are. That's part of being a man. It's heartbreaking.
Wow, Wendy, I'm so glad that you brought this up. We're biologically different from men, and I don't know that many women have really thought about it from this point of view that you've just expressed here. And I think that this is just a really important awareness for us to have, and how that can be a really difficult line for a man to walk, because, yes, we expect them to step up and ask out and to take the lead, and we want that, but then at the same time, every time they do that, they have that risk of being perceived, if you don't want that attention from that particular guy, as the creepy guy. And I just think that there's a lot of room for compassion here, and I'm really so glad you brought this up. It is kind of a heart-wrencher to think about it from that perspective, but yet, wow, what an important awareness for us to have as women.
Yeah, and it's why I really push for online dating. There's a lot of pain-in-the-butt things about online dating. I know a lot of terrible things about online dating. There are creepy people who are online dating, but there are a lot of amazing men who won't meet you in the real world, even if he saw you in public. You know, one of my, and I'm sure, Michelle, you get this all the time, one of my common questions that I get from my clients who are single, the questions always starts with a statement, and the statement is, "I want my husband, but I don't want to go date online. Where can I meet him in the real world?"
Right.
Well, the truth is there's never been a time in history where you're not going to meet him in the real world. Consent is such a big deal right now for the right reasons, right? Consent's a huge deal, and there's all this talk about my personal space and don't interrupt me. So if he's standing online at Starbucks with you and he thinks you're adorable, he's never going to chance it.
Mm-hmm.
Never. Even if you had the time and the space and the inclination. He doesn't have your permission, and a lot of guys won't take it anymore. So unless you meet at a party where your friend introduced you, that's about all we got left. Church.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, my fourth one is one of the most important things I ever learned from men, is how safe we are in the world. even in our sexuality and our sensuality, and because of our sexuality and our sensuality, how safe we are in the world because men are here protecting us. And I know for some women, you just want to not listen anymore. You don't believe it. And I know in 2002, when I walked my butt into the workshop room, I walked in with the attitude that all men were dangerous. I'd had something happen in my young childhood that made me see that there was no such thing as a safe man, and they were all predators, every one of them. Not one of them could be trusted. And I, from 2002 to now, am one of the biggest advocates for men because I see them, and I know that their default setting is to protect. Now, are there predators out there? Yep, there are. And absolutely. And you got to watch out for those guys. And unfortunately, 70% of predators are repeat offenders, so they really get around a lot. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they're out there. But the majority of men, like in the 90-something percentile, their default is to protect you. If you walked into a sushi restaurant right now and you looked around, you scanned the room and you saw 11 men, you could count on about 9 or 10 of them saving you if something bad went down. Maybe the 11th one was with his wife and new baby or checking a text on his phone or something, wasn't paying attention to you. But they would rise to the occasion. And I have actually taken it on like a practice, like a spiritual practice, that when I'm out in the world and I'm thinking about it, I got some extra time on my hands, I actually look for how men are protecting me. Because what you don't know, women, are there are men on the street when you're on the street that are watching you, that have your back, that if the crazy homeless person starts hassling you, they're going to be there. They're going to walk up and disrupt that. If you're on a really bad date and you actually feel like you're with a predator and you're in trouble, say something to a stranger. He'll pull you out of it. I've seen it happen. I've had that happen. I've asked for that to happen. Men are here for us. And, you know, the really heartbreaking part, and I was one of them, is we think all men are dangerous. I was sitting around my living room having a similar conversation with a very small group of people, both men and women, and two of the women got their hackles up, as most women do, about this. Like, you might be having that experience right now. And I had told a story, and they said, oh, you're so lucky that you walked away unscathed. And I said, no, I trust men to have me on that one. And as I'm sitting in this room, I'm watching the response of these two women that were completely unspoken, which are all men are dangerous, in a room of four protectors who totally had all women's backs, you know, and it's just this very incongruent world that we're living in, and it has to do with our safety. You know, we feel like we're not safe a good deal of the time because there are some dangerous men, but we need to figure out a way to wire our brain to spot that, to keep our eye out for it, and to really look around and see the other, not the other half, the other majority, and that would be the men who have our back. I mean, there's not a time when, so I used to live in Oakland for a while, and Oakland's really interesting. To live in Oakland, California, everybody knows one thing to be true, and that is with a city of that size and 600 police officers, no matter what happens, the cops are not coming. They're not coming. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that to be true. So because that is the situation, the cops aren't coming, there's just all kinds of hustle. You know, there's all sorts of cons and hustles, and it's just a drag. The minute when I was living there, the minute Dave fell in love with me, his mission was to get me out of Oakland. But anytime we went anywhere, and Dave's an extraordinary man, but he's also a very ordinary man. He is an everyday man. Every time we'd go anywhere, like the gas station, and he'd look over and some woman is alone in her, you know, trying to pump gas. He'd stand there. He'd wait, even though his gas was done and it was time for us to leave. He'd wait to see that guy who was about to do that little gas station hustle on her. He'd wait it out to see if that all wrapped up okay. And when she drove off, then we drove off. Men do this for you all the time, and you have no idea, because they're not going to step in to say, hey, I'm here to save you in case you need it. No, no, no. They don't want to be the creepy guy. They're just going to stand back. But they got you. They got you from afar.
Mm.
Happens all the time.
I love that perspective, and something I think about a lot, this is something my husband taught me, this concept of confirmation bias, right, which is basically we form a belief, and so a belief might be all men are creepy or all men are dangerous, in this case, with this example that you're talking about. And then we go out into the world and we find that we experience that over and over and over again because that's our belief system. And so we go out there subconsciously, I'm sure, in most cases, and we gather evidence to confirm that belief. And so that belief grows deeper and bigger and stronger. And this happens so often in relationships. And what I really appreciate about what you said and this perspective is that I believe that by having at least trying on this new belief that most men out there are in that role of being our protectors, we can begin to add to the confirmation bias in that direction, and we will begin to see men in general in a whole new light. And I think that's a really beautiful perspective, Wendy. Thank you.
You're welcome. Hey, I just looked at the clock. I've eaten our time, so I'm going to give you the last one, and I'm going to bullet point it for you, and you all are just going to have to road test it to see yourself if it's true. I'm going to say it. I'm going to tell you you should believe it, and if you don't believe it, go check this out for yourself. Men do not see our stretch marks. Single focus has them focus on our beauty. And if you think that you have a flaw that is not a part of your beauty, if he's noticing your stretch marks, it's because he thinks it's beautiful. They only focus on what's beautiful. They don't see anything else. I didn't believe it for the longest time. Go check it out. There are my thoughts.
Well, I love that, Wendy. And I'm just going to say this really quickly. So most of you know that I'm a breast cancer survivor, and I have everything that that entails. I went through chemo, a double mastectomy, radiation, the whole works. And what I can tell you is that I don't have the same body that I had before then. I have some scars and I have some owies, and my hair has grown back, fortunately. But one of my fears, along with surviving cancer, was would my husband still find me attractive? And I can tell you that one of the most moving things that happened to me during the breast cancer journey, if there was a gift in that, was when my husband would kiss my bald head and tell me how beautiful I was and how I still know that he still sees me as beautiful despite the fact that I now have rebuilt breasts and I'm not the same as I was before. But he doesn't see me that way. He sees me as who I am. He sees me for the essence of who I am, for my beauty, and for all that I am and not just those physical things. And I think that it is really important to say this because there's this perception that men see our flaws in the same way that we see our flaws. But I think it comes back to what we were talking about earlier, Wendy. If we're his type, if we're his woman, he's going to continue to see us as beautiful. And he's going to see the beautiful things in us. So I just want to say, yep, that one's true.
Yep.
I'm going to bullet point really quickly through mine, and I'll just say a couple of minutes on each one because I want us to have time to take some questions, and maybe we'll even go just a couple minutes longer. But before I do that, I just want to say that most of the things I'm going to be sharing are just a couple of points that are recaps from some of the things that I pulled from the interviews, from the man panel, things that really stood out for me, themes, or things that really touched my heart. And some of these things might sound kind of obvious, but I think it's really worth considering these things from a deeper level. The first one is men really do have deep feelings and emotions. I know that sounds obvious, but I think often as women we can see men as kind of the rough, tough, unfeeling, or unemotional kinds of beings. And while they may not express their emotions, feelings in the same way or time frame that we as women might, I come to understand and know how deeply they can be hurt and how deeply they feel. And I think there's a lot of social conditioning, and they feel like they have to protect themselves. They're not always in an environment where they feel like they can really express that side of themselves. And I just want to, on this topic, before I leave this topic really quick, I just want to quote something that Evan Mark Hatt said in his interview, because I just love this. He said, women need to have some sympathy and empathy for men and men for women. He said, men are not the other. Men are just like you, single, struggling, confused, damaged, ready to give up, wanting to try again, except for one thing. They don't have any support. They don't have an event like this, like the man panel. They don't typically have a coach. For the most part, they don't even really have friends. They have their job, and if they don't have a wife or a woman, what do they have? He said, most men are really, really lonely. He said, nobody talks about this. Men don't talk about this. It doesn't sound good for them to go around saying, I'm lonely. He said, many of them are banging their head against the wall, knowing somewhere inside that they're a really good guy. He says, have a measure of sympathy for them, because many guys face more rejection than women will ever face. That just really touched me. I just thought that was really sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the first one. This next one, this is something we hear about a lot, but I just want to emphasize this because this was definitely a theme through the event, that men need to be accepted, appreciated, and admired. And one of the things that came out for me here was the way to motivate your man or a man is to not complain, criticize, or cuss him out for all the ways he's disappointing you, what he's not doing, what he's doing wrong. And Evan Mark Hatz talked about his wife, and he said, she's the only person in my 47 years I've ever met who accepts me as exactly as I am. And he says, most men don't even know how to tell you that this is what he's looking for. But he said, in talking about his wife, he said, I don't care about a woman being younger, smarter, cuter, whatever. He said, this woman accepts me. I feel accepted, appreciated, admired by her, and she's the first person I've ever felt that way for. And he said, now this might make some women mad, because if you're feeling like you're already doing that with a man you're dating or a man you're in a relationship with, and it doesn't seem to be working, Evan Mark Hatz said, the key is not to change your behavior and treat him poorly back. The key is to say, well, this is the wrong guy, and move on. And he emphasized that two wrongs don't make a right. And that we want to be up-leveling our behavior, and we want to be in a relationship where we can offer that kind of acceptance, appreciation, and admiration to a man, and that we're going to get back the gifts that he has to bring, the best that he has to bring, and that provider, protector, and that feeling of being loved, cherished, and adored. And you want to be in a relationship where you can be a giver and he can be a giver, and also recognize that we're all imperfect people. John Gray also talked about how important it is to give him some positive feedback, and he talked about these three magic phrases in case you didn't write these down. He said these are really simple, but they'll make a man feel really good. And the first one was simply, that's a good idea. Like, listen to him, hear what he has to say, and let him have a good idea once in a while, and let him know you think it's a good idea. Along the same lines, that makes sense. And then another one, he said, wow, you're right. It's just a way of affirming them and letting them feel like they're competent in what they're expressing. Another thing that I have found, this is not something that John Gray mentioned, but this is something I've found that works really well. If a man does something and it doesn't quite go right, let's say he takes you out on a date and everything doesn't go perfectly smoothly. Maybe they can't find your reservation at the restaurant or whatever. This simple phrase can just take away so much stress from a man when you just say, it's not your fault. Like, give him the benefit of the doubt and just let him off the hook when something small that was not going to kill anyone goes wrong. Give him a break because he's trying, and that phrase can literally just transform a man's capability to continue on to try to please you when he knows he falls short, to just give him a little break and say, it's not your fault. Just let it go when you can. The third one is men need to be needed. We hear this one a lot too, and I think there's a lot of resistance around this because I think when we hear needed, we think, I don't want to be needy, right? Mm-hmm. And a man doesn't want you to be needy. He doesn't want you to be a whiner. He doesn't want you to be helpless. We're not talking about damsel in distress here. But a masculine man and a man that typically wants to be in a relationship with a woman in a romantic way does typically want to feel like he has something significant to contribute to you and your life. And several of the men on the man panel talked about this in a variety of different ways. And one of the men said, when a woman's so self-sufficient and sends that message or even speaks the message that she doesn't need a man, he said he'll get the message, he'll receive it, and he's likely to leave because he just basically assesses the situation and says, well, there's really no job opening for me here. There's really not a place for me. He may be very impressed, but he may not stick around because he won't really feel like he has a purpose there and that what he has to offer is going to be appreciated. When I think about this one, I love this old Howard Jones song. I know I'm dating myself, but it's a song called Someone You Need. And just a couple of the lyrics, I'll just read a couple of lines. He says, how have you been lately? I hear you're a little down. So do you think maybe I could come around? Because I could be someone you need. Wrap you in blankets on dark winter nights. Be your best confidant. Pay the right compliment. I could be someone you need. I just think that's really sweet. And that, I think, is a sentiment. I'm like, first of all, what woman doesn't want that, right?
Right.
Wrap you in blankets on dark winter nights. Be your best confidant. Pay the right compliment. But a man wants to be needed in that way, too. And I just think that song, for me, is an expression of a man's need to be needed. I have more to say about that, but I'm going to move on. This one, I think, is something that I think we don't always understand either, and it's, I think a man wants to know a woman's standards. Now, I'm not just talking about standards for how or when you might want to be involved with him from in a physical or sexual way, but I think he wants to know what your wants, needs, and preferences are, and I think a man appreciates and is attracted to a woman who knows herself well enough to know what they are and how to request what she wants and needs from him. Of course, the key here is how you ask for what you want and need, and that could be a whole discussion, but I will give you just a couple of little tips here that I think might be helpful. And the cool thing about this is that this means you don't have to morph yourself into being someone or trying to act in a certain way to try to impress him or try to be who you think he wants you to be. This is about you letting him know who you really are and what your real wants and needs, hopes and dreams, desires are, so that he can have that opportunity to step up into that space to please you if he feels so inclined. I think, like I was saying, the key here is knowing how to invite this kind of response from a man, and I think there's a couple of little magic phrases. They're very simple, but they can work really effectively when you make requests of men and you invite them to either do something differently or to do something that you might really prefer. And these are the magic phrases. They're really simple. You can just say, I'd be more comfortable if, for example, let's say he wants you to meet him in the parking lot of the restaurant. You can say, I'd be more comfortable if we met inside. It's a simple thing. You're not making him wrong. You're just letting him know your preference. Or a variation of it is, I'm not comfortable with meeting outside in the parking lot, and I'd really prefer and would feel better about meeting inside. This is just a simple example, but you can use this in a variety of different ways. And this way, you're not making him wrong, but you're letting him know your preferences, your needs, and you're kind of setting a standard for how you want to be treated. Good old Dr. Phil said, we teach other people how to treat us. And in a lot of ways, we really do. And then, Wendy, I know you talked about this one, too, and I'm just going to add just a tiny little bit about this. And you talked about how men come into commitment, and I just phrased it a little different way, and I said, most men fall in love by doing. Men fall in love differently than women do. And in one of the earlier interview I did with John Gray, that he just said a couple of really key things that I'll mention really quickly here. He said, women should not get lost in trying to earn a man's love. He should do things to win her over, and she should allow him the opportunity to win her over. And he said, when you give a man more, he tends to give less to you. And this is especially in the early stages of a relationship, because at some point you want to be able to give fully and wholeheartedly, but you don't want to overgive too much too fast too soon. Then he says, make sure you're not giving more than a man is giving you. When a man gives to you, it makes him feel more bonded. What this means to me, ladies, and I love this, is you get to lean back, relax, and what I like to call graciously receive. That means appreciate what he has to offer if he's a man that you're interested in. And then he gets to feel rewarded if he succeeds in pleasing you. And this allows him to feel his emotions. He gets out of his head. He gets to feel his emotions. He can feel like he's winning, and he can feel like the gifts that he brings to the table, what he has to offer, might be valued and appreciated. And then this increases his attraction to you, and it sets you up for a win-win because you're getting more of what you really want, but he gets to feel that opportunity to please you, and it makes him feel really, really good. I went through that really, really fast, but those are just a few things. Do you have anything you want to add really quick, Wendy, before we move forward?
Yes, my experience and all of my interviews concur with everything you said.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm glad you're backing me up. I'm glad
yeah,
we're on the same wavelength here. Okay, we'll go for maybe just a few extra minutes because I really want to take some of these questions because you all have sent in some amazing questions. Wendy, shall we take a few questions?
Yes, please.
You up for that?
Of course.
Okay, let's see. This is a tricky one, Wendy, and I would love for you to field this one first. So I might throw you a little curveball, but you're up for it.
I'm on it.
Okay, can a man stay faithful to a 30-year marriage once he's used unfaithfulness as a way to deal with stress for 20 years? Both of his parents openly did this while he was growing up. Is there hope for us? He's a good guy with lousy coping skills, and I just found out about it. I pretty quickly realized I'd rather work together at changing the things that brought this on than to lose a great friend and someone my family loves, too. So far, we're in this together. Thoughts?
Yeah, infidelity is a tricky one, and I think the number one thing that you're up against is, can he feel safe enough to be honest with himself and with you about what's possible? Did you happen to mention in there that he'd cheated for 20 years? Did I hear that right?
Yeah, he's used unfaithfulness as a way to deal with stress for 20 years.
Yeah, that's a long stretch. And one thing that can happen, especially as we all age, is my guess is he couldn't live with the breach of integrity anymore. So I don't know him. I don't know what he's capable of. I don't know where he is. But the fact that he brought this to your attention without you finding it, unless you found it, I don't know your situation. But we'll assume for the sake of this conversation that he brought this to your attention. He was unwilling to live with the breach of integrity, and he wants to work on it. And anything is possible. And the real answer is you probably need to figure out a way together to see if he can be safe enough to really confront, is he the type of person that can be or that is willing to only have one partner for the rest of his life? And some men can do it, and some women can do it, and then there are some men and women who can't. You know, and in the past, we've always had infidelity and affairs and things like that, women and men on the side. But more and more, people are starting to be honest about it. And you don't necessarily meet them on the street as open relationship people because they're private and it's none of your business. But that's another way people are working through this, where they can stay together and people can be who they truly are and get what they need. But it's out in the open. And when it's out in the open, it's no longer unfaithful. It's faithful to what you've agreed upon. But the key here really is, can he feel safe enough to really discover if it's possible for him to be a one-woman man?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so much here that we could talk about. One thing that stands out for me, too, is, of course, the trust has to be there and the emotional connection. Sometimes cheating for men can be more or less kind of a physical outlet, and she's saying it's for coping with stress. But for me, if this were my situation, I would want to know emotionally, was this an affair or was this, you know, I would want to know more. I would want to understand more. I would want to understand more on a deeper level. And then together you have to make the choice as to whether you're both ready to move forward in this situation and if there's enough there to salvage. And in this case, it sounds like at least that's where they're at for the time being. I don't want to spend any more time on that one right now because we could go a lot of different directions right now, but I hope that's at least a little bit helpful.
And she can come find me if she liked what I said. Come find me.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep.
There you go. I'll fill this one first because this happens to be a situation I know something about. It says, how and when is it appropriate to share medical history with a potential life partner? For example, sharing that one has survived breast cancer. When I got breast cancer, I was already married. And I actually asked my husband about this at one point. I said, if I had had breast cancer before we had gotten married and was a breast cancer survivor and had gone through everything, at what point would you have wanted me to tell you? And I think this can apply to much more than breast cancer. This can be any maybe deep, dark secret, whether it be medical or financial or something in our past that we're not proud of. And I don't think that we need to sit down with someone on the first date and reveal those kind of things. For me, and this is kind of what my husband said, for me it feels like once you have the sense that this is someone that you could be potentially moving into what could become a more significant relationship with, then that I think would be the time to share something like this because, first of all, you don't want to share something this intimate with someone that's more or less a stranger. But on the other hand, I also feel like you want to know before you invest months and years of your life into a relationship whether something like this would be something that they might not be able to handle. What do you want to add to that real quick, Wendy?
Yeah, what you said. And also when you feel safe.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here's another one. Do you think there are some men who, no matter how perfect their relationship is, will forever sabotage it, either feeling they don't deserve it or always needing to find that new relationship rush?
Yes, both men and women do that.
Yeah, I think there are both men and women that do that as well. And I think that means that there's some work that still needs to be done for them to be able to have a lasting, loving relationship if that's what they desire. And that's another one of the reasons why I think it's so that you're all to be complimented for being here and for being on these kinds of events and for being committed to your own self-growth because, let's face it, none of us make it through life without getting a few nicks and dents and emotional pain and scars, and unless we are committed to our own self-growth, we're all likely to sabotage our relationships for one of these reasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's see. This says, would you speak a little about older women, say 56? I'm not comfortable going online into dating sites. What do you think about matchmaking services? Any thoughts? I'm a widow, new to all this. I am tech savvy, but not comfortable with going out with endless strings of men. Now, Wendy went on 121 dates.
I do not recommend that for anyone, including myself, by the way.
Right.
I took one for the team.
Yeah. Here's my thought on this. First of all, 56, in my mind, I'm 53. I feel like you're still relatively young. I recognize everything we can say relatively. But I can tell you this, that I have many clients in their 50s, 60s who are meeting great men online. Now, that having been said, if you're a widow, new to all this, and you're just not ready for that, I think the first place to start would be to explore some opportunities in just increasing your opportunities to be around people and socialize offline. And one of the things that I do with some of my clients just to help them kind of dip their toe in the water is we do an internet search of all different kinds of events. And it's amazing what I can find even in some smaller cities and communities of just cultural events or charity events or business type events or seminars or expos or different kinds of things, and just getting out there and start meeting more people just so you start feeling a little bit more comfortable with some of those initial meetings and just conversing with people in a casual way. Because I think it can feel, if you've been married for a long time, you say you're a widow and you may have been married for a while, I think it can be hard sometimes to jump right in with online dating. That having been said, Wendy and I are both big advocates of online dating because it allows you the opportunity to meet people that you would never otherwise meet. And you actually can take, depending on how you refine that process, you actually can have a lot of control in how you use those tools so that you can use them really effectively for yourself. And that's a whole conversation, and maybe we can do a webcast specifically on online dating and how to make it more manageable, user-friendly, and actually even fun. What do you want to add to that, Wendy?
Go dancing. Be terrible at it. Don't go dancing at something that you're really good at. Be friendly. Be available for everyone to dance with. You will be a hit. Another thing I recommend is once you are willing to start meeting people in real life, and I know this might sound like a total stretch, but it's just an outing where you talk to people. There are speed dating events in bigger towns where it's done by age group, so you actually know that you're there meeting men that are age appropriate for you that want to be meeting you. And I would recommend that type of event, whether it be more casual or more sit down and chat for 10 minutes apiece, just to get your feet wet, just to start practicing talking to strangers, having conversations with strangers. Might as well try it out on somebody, right? I do not recommend a lot of the bigger matchmakers. I like the big companies, like It's Just Lunch and Table of Six. I'm not a fan. They have international horrible, horrible reputations. So what you want to do is when you think you want to join something, do not let your heart lead the way. You want to let your brain lead the way. And the first place you want to go is to a review site like Yelp or one of those types of event review sites where you can see honest to God, real reviews. Like, for example, if you want an It's Just Lunch in San Francisco, you would see hundreds and hundreds of one-star reviews. Now, no matchmaker is going to have a perfect score, especially when it comes to love. So you'll have some hit and miss with some good matchmakers, but look at your reviews. Get a real source if you're going to go in that direction. Don't just pick from an advertisement.
Yeah, and I also have had clients that, prior to coming to me, have spent a lot of money on matchmaking services. And up to this point, and I'm sure there are cases where they've worked, but up to this point, I haven't met anyone or talked to anyone that that's worked really well for. So my general impression, at least at this point, is not the most favorable one.
Yeah, I know some really great matchmakers who have a lot of marriages under their belt, but they're few and far between.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so here's another one. I'm an attractive 50s age woman. I have a professional career and I've done well for myself, but I keep meeting these guys on Match that are more about hooking up than a real relationship. They will sell you all the BS and then break your heart. Please help.
What I want to say about that is I don't know if you're doing reaching out or if you're waiting for guys to reach out to you, but I've never once, out of my 121 first dates, I never once asked a guy out. Never. But I reached out to almost 80% of the men online that I dated because that's where the quality comes in when you do the picking. And once you have found men that you resonate, that are like you, that are interesting, reach out with two or three lines of interest. You like horses? Me too. Where do you ride? Or whatever connection you can make with them just to let them know out of the sea of 25 million people, hi, I'm over here, and if you want me, come get me. Do some version of that.
Yeah, when I work with my clients, we actually create a whole online and offline plan because I believe there's value in having your feet in both camps to some extent. And I work with my clients specifically. I really think there's an art to online dating, and I think it can be a very hard, miserable, discouraging, disheartening experience if you don't have some support and really have kind of a plan or how you make those tools work effectively for you. Unfortunately, I don't have time to go into a lot of detail about that, but one thing I will tell you with my clients, we will go online together, become your virtual wingwoman. We will go online together and we will go through profiles, and then I help my clients craft an initial message, which is more or less a very short, sweet, simple message, making a little comment or asking a little tiny question about something that we see on their profile or in one of their pictures. Yeah. And it might be something as simple as, wow, you've been to Machu Picchu? I've always wanted to go there. That's it.
Yeah.
It's literally the online version of giving someone a smile and making eye contact from across the room. It's that simple. And I find that if you use the sites in those ways, then it can become really, really empowering, and it doesn't feel so icky. And you become more of the screener.
Yes. It can become really juicy. Michelle and I do the same thing, and I'm wondering, Michelle, if you have the same attitude that I do, because we sound very much aligned, that winking and all that, no go, right?
Mm-hmm. I just think there's so much of that that goes on. First of all, I think you want to be the proactive chooser to some extent. Even though you want to stay in the feminine role, all you're doing is inviting a conversation. You're not saying, hey, baby, do you want to have lunch sometime? You're just saying, hey, hi, I saw your picture, you know, at Machu Picchu. That's amazing. I've always wanted to go there. It's almost like something you might say to someone if you were standing there talking to them at a party. It's just an invitation to converse, but you're choosing who you're opening the conversations with, and then you don't have to feel like you have to sift through all the weird or dirty or icky messages.
Half your age, twice your age.
Right, right.
Over.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I like to position you with online dating in a way that empowers you, and I think it makes it a lot more fun. And again, this is a whole nother conversation that we could go into much more depth with, but I am hoping that might help just a little bit. Okay, here we go. Here's the next one. This is kind of a tricky one. Let's see, Wendy, if we can put ourselves to the test here. It says, a man I've been seeing some, and I know, she puts in capital letters, is not dating anyone else, just wants to see me when he comes into town about 6 times a year. I have told him that doesn't work for me. I'm looking to date someone. He said he's busy with work where he lives right now, but does eventually want a meaningful relationship. He did mention us taking a trip somewhere. Well, that isn't going to be happening because I'm not going to have sex with him unless he wants to regularly date me. And then she says, we've seen each other 5 times, and he's come into town over the last 5 months. The chemistry is off the charts. Anyway, what she's asking here is, does it take a man a long time to see if he wants to date? More seriously in a situation like this, should I see him in September and then see if he wants to make more of an effort? What I'm hearing here, this is a long question, but what I'm hearing here is she's got this man, he's coming into town on occasion, and she wants more of a significant dating relationship, not just 6 times a year.
I'm ready. I'm ready for this one. You ready?
Okay, go for it.
Believe him. He is available for you 6 times a year. If that is insufficient for you, then say goodbye. If seeing him 6 times a year would be delightful while you're dating other people to see who's a good fit for you, then you should do that. But you're not going to flip this guy.
Yeah, I agree. There's something there going on, and he's satisfied. He's comfortable with whatever it is he's giving you right now. And if that's not what you want and that's not enough for you, then I think he's not your guy. I agree. So we'll just cut to the chase on that one.
Yep.
This one says, this is an interesting one too, Wendy, because I know both you and I work with a lot of successful and professional women and that come from that background. And one of the themes of the event here has been being in touch with your feminine side and knowing how to be in that feminine energy and grace in your interactions with a man. But she says, I'd like for you to address the situation of a woman who is not successful in business, never have been, and have no interest in being. Do we have to go out and create a success in business before we're eligible to marry a good man? Please address this. Thank you very much. A loyal listener who is not a successful businesswoman, but who is smart and has a lot to offer a man. How important is this really to a man? Depends on the man, first of all, but my feeling is that the whole reason we've had so much emphasis on this whole being in the feminine and being able to get into that feminine energy is for those of us that have been out there in the business world for any period of time. We have gotten into our masculine energy in many situations, myself included, and it can be hard to know how to interact with a man in a way that's complementary and doesn't come across as being more competitive. But in answer to your question, I believe that there are so many men out there that just want your tenderness and your femininity and your heart and your love and your compassion and all of the things that we've been talking about tonight that make him feel admired, appreciated, and respected, and that there is a man out there absolutely for you that's going to appreciate what you have to offer and what you bring to the table. And the reason we emphasize the other piece is just because that has been a challenge for so many of us who have been out there in the career and business world for a long period of time.
Yeah, we talk about strong and successful in business because it's a bit of a hindrance and it's something that we're contending with. So the fact that that's not your bag is actually kind of a perk for you. And women overall are the ones, the group of the two, that are looking for status and accomplishment in that masculine form of the work world. So it matters to many women what a man does. It doesn't matter to men what a woman does. That doesn't mean a man isn't going to be impressed or proud by a dynamic, powerful powerhouse of a businesswoman. He'll incorporate that into the charm of her, but it's not the thing that's on their radar. They're not looking for that the way a woman looks for that.
Yeah, thank you. I love that. I can't resist. We have to have this one more because I just think this is such an important topic that will help so many people. She's thanking us for a wonderful event, and she says, is it important to be living your own fulfilling, happy life first before opening to magnetize your ideal beloved partner, or can you better evolve by being with your beloved, growing together in partnership? My concern is that I won't attract my best partner when I'm not at my best, yet I've had enough of hiding from life and love after being alone after divorce, letting my life pass me by, working on myself for many years. Much thanks and love. This is from Marnie in Houston. I love this question. It really pulls at my heartstrings. And first of all, what I want to say is that I believe, of course, we want to be out there living a fulfilling, happy life, but I think sometimes we think that means that we have to have everything handled, we have to be at our perfect weight, we have to be have our house perfectly cleaned out. I mean, it's like we feel like we have to have all of our little ducks marching in a row. I don't know about you, but my ducks wander off all the time. And
never had them in a row myself.
I know, mine are marching in all different directions. While I think it is great to continually be focused on improving ourselves and our lives and growing and finding joy and satisfaction and leading a rich, full life, and certainly that's going to be attractive to the right person, and it also lends itself well to you being out there and have the visibility to be seen by the right person, what I don't think it means, and this is where I think we get tripped up here, is that we have to have everything handled and that we have to have everything perfect. I mean, heaven forbid, if that were the case, none of us would ever find love. And I actually believe that one of the things that makes us most attractive is our authenticity and being able to show the real person that we really are. And actually, even some of our weaknesses and vulnerabilities, in my opinion, make us more relatable. It makes it safer for a man to show his true self and his true heart, because he knows, you know, we actually have our challenges and our weaknesses and our fears and our doubts and our insecurities and our wounds and our hurts, as well as our big hopes and dreams. I think this is just a really, really beautiful question. So I just say, don't wait to find love. Don't wait to try to get all of your ducks marching in a row. Go out there and live your life richly and fully and be happy. Find joy. But don't demand perfection of yourself or anyone else, because it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where we'll get it in our head about, you know, I live in California, so we're all about the vibration. You got to be on a high vibration and vibrating at our highest for the greatest good of ourselves and the planet and the best possible case scenario, right? And it's good to be in great top shape. It's great to be there. And we're not always there. And some of us, we're still waiting to get there. So we see the potential that we are. But the thing is one of the things that we'll do to ourselves is our inner critic will take that thing we hear from an external source, like, try and vibrate at a high level, right, to attract a high-level person. And our inner critic will twist it and say, you will only meet the right person for you if you are at your most top-notch, perfect self. And it's all unattainable. And like Michelle said, her ducks aren't always in a row. Mine aren't ever in a row. And I've yet to see them all in a row. And if I would have waited to be in the best possible single person shape, yeah, I wouldn't have gone on date one, let alone 121. I would have never found my partner. And I got to say that on my first date with him, or second date with him, he said to me, hey, I noticed you're off OkCupid. What's that about? And I said, oh, don't worry about it. You know, I'm wrapping up this date with you, but I'm actually going to take a little break from dating. I'm writing a book. I'm finishing that up, and I've got some things I got to do. I think I might go back online at the beginning of the year. It was February. I had had it. I was in terrible dating shape. And I met my partner. So I'm living proof, but you want to be in good working order. That's where you want to look from. Am I in good enough shape? Am I in good working order to get out there and have a lovely, enchanting time with someone, to be graceful, whether they're a match or not, and then go about my day? You just have to be a person, and you're going to attract who you attract, and you can meet the greatest person in the world for you even if you're not totally ready. And for all of you, if you have to lose weight, don't wait to lose weight. Don't wait. Don't wait for it to get less busy. Don't wait for the kids to go back to school. Don't wait for people to need you less. There's never a right time to do it.
Yeah, I think that there's also just one last thing I want to add to this bit, too, before we wrap up, and that is I think we have to recognize in all of our relationships, most of the women that are part of this series have dated, some have probably been in relationships or marriages, maybe in relationships now, but most of us have had our heart broken or have had some disappointment, and we probably feel like we made a few mistakes along the way. And one of the things I want to just really emphasize here is that I really believe you deserve your own compassion. Just like we talked about men deserving your compassion, when we think about it, like if we look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, for example, after food, clothing, shelter, safety, one of our deepest human needs is to love and be loved, to know and be known, to be a part of something, to belong. It's a very deep human desire, and I just think it's really important for us to remember to have compassion for ourselves, because all we've been out there doing is doing the best that we knew how to get one of our deepest human needs met. And I know for myself, I fell on my face so many times. I mean, I shot myself in the foot so many times, it's a wonder I can walk. But that's one of the reasons why I have so much compassion, and I know you do too, Wendy, because we've been there, done that, bought that T-shirt. And I just want you to have that compassion for yourself and give yourself a break. And whatever real or perceived mistakes or errors in judgment or whatever you might want to call them, you feel like you've made, forgive yourself, dust yourself off, recognize that you are a lovable human being and that you are deserving of being loved and cherished and adored. And I just really feel really strongly about that. And that's my desire for you. And that's really my intention behind all of the work that I do. And I know that's also Wendy's life work. I mean, that's the reason we're so passionate about this, because we know what's possible. We know what a big difference it makes in our lives, but we both know we had a hard time, we slipped and falled, we made mistakes, but we're still worthy of loving and being loved. And the beauty about something like this is we're learning, we're growing, and as we gain new awareness, we can do better. We can't do better until we know better. I just want to leave you with that thought, because I just think it's so important for you to have compassion for yourself. Along with the men, I just really want to encourage you to have compassion for yourself and to treat yourself with kindness and to believe in your heart that you are worthy of being loved, cherished, and adored. That's my little speech. This has been so much fun, and I know Wendy and I could go all night because we're so passionate about this. We want to be respectful of your time, and I'm really grateful because you've all stayed here with us, and I'm really, really grateful for all of you being a part of the Man Panel. Wendy, I want to thank you. You have been a delight. I just love and adore you. I think you're amazing and a gift to the world and such a blessing, and I'm so grateful that you joined me tonight. It was just a blast, and I hope we can do it again.
Oh, thank you. I feel the same about you. I feel like we're two birds of a, what is that saying? Two birds of a feather.
Yes, yes. And ladies, thank you so much for being here with us. We're sending you so much love, many blessings, and I really thank you from the bottom of my heart for the opportunity to have spent this time with you through the Man Panel series. Bye-bye for now.